excuse me. So we are going to introduce now the next step, which are of course the physical step, the field strengths, so the electromagnetic, the gauge fields, really not gauge potentials, but gauge fields, the analog of electric and magnetic field for non-Abelian gauge theory. We are going to introduce the action, so the extension to non-Abelian gauge theory of the Maxwell action, which leads to the classical equation of motion, Maxwell equations for non-Abelian gauge fields. I describe the coupling with matter. And then I start to discuss the quantization by starting to discuss the gauge fixing procedure. Okay, so I'm going to introduce the field strengths. You knew the action, analog of the Maxwell action, so the and equation of motion, coupling to matter fields, and then I start to discuss quantization. But this is going to take a full two lectures. Okay, so let's remind what we did yesterday. I consider a gauge group, which was, for simplicity, the group SU2. That's an example, but that's the simplest example of a theory which has a non-Abelian gauge symmetries. So I had matter fields, that's important here, which I called phi, which is a scalar multiplets of a complex field because they carry charges. Okay. Complex fields. So therefore those objects are, the field is a vector in C2, it's a two-dimensional complex vector space, which is a space on which lives the fundamental representation of G. So this belongs, in some sense, to the fundamental representation of SU2. Okay. So then I have this SU2. So I have an action which carries an SU2 symmetry. So there are currents associated to this symmetry. And in order to introduce interaction via currents in this theory, you have to introduce the gauge potentials field A, which is a collection of AMU, where also, so phi, these are indices. I denote them I. Going from 1 to 2, that's our indices, gauge indices, so group indices, the fundamental representation of A. Okay. I have gauge potential phi, where A mu here are Lorentz indices, exactly like in electromagnetism. But each A mu is a multiplet of three fields because there are three currents. So each AMU is a collection of A mu A with A equal 1 to 3 because they are coupled to the current. There are three currents. So this lives in the adjoint representation of SU2. They transform under a symmetry transformation as adjoint representation, object of the adjoint representation. Okay. And a convenient way to represent globally that, an important way, is to, in fact, to gather this into saying that this is A mu A T A, where the T A's are generator of the vector space in which lives the adjoint representation, which is the Lie algebra. The Lie algebra of SU2, which is usually denoted little s, little u of 2. Okay. And for the case of SU2, the Lie algebra of SU2 is the vector space of Hermitian, well, with our definition, in fact, it's I times this, but it's a space of Hermitian symmetric matrices. In fact, it's anti-Hermitian, traceless and traceless. So the TAs are the normalization is at CA, where sigma A are the Pauli matrices. Okay, so these are 2 by 2 matrices, 2 by 2 Hermitian traceless matrices. Okay. And I wrote the sigma A somewhere. I think the sigma A are 1. Well, sigma 1 is 0, 1, 1, 0. I think sigma 2 is 0, minus I, 0. And sigma 3 is 1, 0, 0, minus 1. Up to signs. Okay. And so writing like that, this object AMU, you can view it as a 2 by 2 matrix, which also has the same property. It's a 2 by 2 Hermitian traceless matrix. And out of its 3 independent components, you get the 3 gauge potentials, which are real. So these are real fields. Okay. So the indices A, going from 1 to 3, here, are indices of, you know, of the coordinates in the adjoint representation of SU. Okay. So this was the first step. Second step, we introduced covariant derivatives. So the analog of covariant derivatives in the Maxwell theory. And the covariant derivatives were defined. So the action, so the covariant derivative means how you compare the value of a field at 2 neighboring points, taking into account the fact that you have an electromagnetic potential. And so for a field living in the fundamental representation, like phi, the covariant derivative is defined as capital D mu of phi is the ordinary derivative with respect to phi minus I A mu times phi. That's a compact notation, but you had the notation with the indices. So remember, this is a 2 by 2. This is a 2 vector. This is a 2 by 2 matrix. So you apply this to this, you get the 2 vectors, which still lives in the fundamental representation. And d mu of a 2 vector is a 2 vector. Okay. Now, for an object, a field living in the adjoint representation, the covariant derivative has to be different, but it's going to be, so let me write the field A. Well, it's not good notation because A lives in the adjoint representation, but it's, so let's call this something like phi A. So this is a field living in the fundamental representation Okay, and for a field living in the adjoint representation, this is the ordinary derivative, adjoint, and then it's minus I times the commutator of A mu with phi A. This is the commutator is the Lie bracket of the Lie algebra of SU2. So this is in fact a definition which is general, it doesn't depend on the group, but you see it's different. But this is consistent because this is a 2x2 matrix. This is a 2x2 matrix, so the commutator is a 2x2 matrix. The commutator is anti-symmetric. So I times the commutator is a symmetric traceless matrix. So this is a symmetric traceless matrix. This is a symmetric, well, an Hermitian, let's say, an Hermitian and an Hermitian traceless matrices. So this is an Hermitian traceless matrices. This is an Hermitian traceless matrices. So this belongs to phi. Okay. And now, of course, the property of the covariant derivative is that when you apply to gauge transformation to phi f, the same gauge transformation applies to d mu of phi f. So they are covariant with respect to gauge transformation. That's why they are called covariant. And of course, this requires a definition of gauge transformation. And gauge transformation are generated by the infinitesimal gauge transformation. And the infinitesimal gauge transformation are generated by some generator alpha, so it's a field alpha of x, which lives in the adjoint representation. And the generator, therefore, can be written as Ta, well, like alpha A Ta, where those are real fields. Real fields. They do not carry indices, Lorentz indices. Okay, so that generator of local gauge transformation. So that's a compact. So these are 2x2 traceless Hermitian matrices. Okay. There are three independent generators, therefore you have the indices A going from 1 to 3. And then a gauge transformation acting on the matter fields means that for a field living in the fundamental representation like this one, phi f transform into, where is it written here, phi f plus I alpha times phi f. So this is a two vector function of x. This is a 2x2 matrix function of x. So this is a vector, which is a function of x. And this is a vector transform of x. So this is a compact notation. You should remember that alpha is a 2x2 Hermitian traceless matrix. Okay, the matrix element depend on x. And now for a field living in the adjoint representation, like this transforms, well, you can guess what it is. Instead of being multiplication, it involves the commutator. So it's plus I times phi f alpha, the commutator of alpha with phi f. So phi f is a 2x2 matrix, alpha is a 2x2 matrix, the commutator is a 2x2 matrix. Okay. So yeah? Pardon? There is no way. What? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Well, I just missed this. Okay. Yeah, of course. Okay, so that's what we did yesterday. And of course, and then of course, you need to define how the gauge potential fields transform under a gauge transformation. And under a gauge transformation, A mu, remember each A mu is a 2x2 matrix, transforms as, what is it written here? D mu A alpha, remember this is a usual term in electromagnetism, transformed as A mu, of course, plus D mu alpha, that's the ordinary term that you have in quantum, in electromagnetism. But then you have minus A commutator of A mu of alpha. That's a new term that is necessary in non-abelian gauge symmetries, commutator. And this can be written since this is minus alpha commutator of alpha with A mu, and this A mu lives in the, each A mu lives in the adjoint representation. You can rewrite this as A mu plus the covariant derivative of alpha. Okay. So this is the effect of gauge transformation. So this is, in fact, this is a very definition of gauge transformation on the electromagnetic field, and usually in Maxwell theory, you just need that. It's when you do QED that you have matter fields. You have the Dirac field, which lives in the fundamental representation. In some theories, you have also fields living in the adjoint representation, but that's just Maxwell theory. This is the new term when the symmetry is non-abelian. Okay, so that's the gauge transformation for the gauge potential. Okay. And of course, these are general formula. So for U1, commutator vanishes, so you recover electromagnetism. Okay, and the property of this covariant derivative is of course that if you make a gauge transformation on d mu of phi, you get d mu of the gauge transform phi of phi. In other words, d mu of phi f plus I alpha times phi f is equal to d mu of phi f plus I alpha d mu of I f, but possibly with the alpha transform. So I think it's d mu of alpha phi f. Oh no, I think it's okay. Yeah, no, it's d mu of, no, there is no, yeah, it's no, what I'm just saying something. This is the same thing as the gauge transform of d mu of L. So this is d mu of I f plus I alpha d mu of I f. D mu of I f. I get a bit confused. This is what I mean, is that this is the same thing as the ordinary, this is the same thing as the covariant derivative of phi f plus I alpha phi f plus I alpha I a pi mu of pi f plus I alpha pi f. But presumably here you have to change phi mu a mu in a mu plus d mu alpha and keep only the first order term. Okay, so this is that's what it means by the fact that it's covariant. Well, just one has to check that. I'm sorry, I'm a bit. Okay, so that's what we need. Okay. So when we deal with covariant derivative, we are sure that we are keeping track of the gauge invariants. Okay. So now, of course, in analogy with electromagnetism, we need to introduce a field strength, F mu nu, which is an antisymmetric, which is an object which is antisymmetric in mu and nu. Well, already in the Maxwell theory, the field strength is a curvature object. Yes?
Sorry, should there be a minus?
What?
Should there be a minus sign in that formula?
Should? The one? This one?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I've not written, so I started to say something, and I'm not sure. So. Well, better forget.
That fundamental representation.
Yes.
D mu by the minus sign there.
In the first line.
Yeah. D mu phi f.
No, there is a minus for the covariant derivative, and there is a plus for the definition of the gauge transformation.
Uh-huh.
That's different. Because, and the minus is going to could be compensated by the plus when you check whether this is. That this is really covariant. That's how it works. It works already like that in Maxwell theory. So there is nothing new except that you deal with matrices instead of dealing with pure functions. Okay, so maybe let's forget that. Let's keep that as an exercise and just say that covariant derivatives are covariant. Transforms. As they should under local gauge transformation. Okay. Okay, so let's go back to the field strengths. Which is in Maxwell theory the electromagnetic tensor. Which gives back to E and B, electric and magnetic fields. Well, this definition is already the case. That this is the definition in electromagnetism. It's a covariant, it's I times the commutator of two operations, which are the covariant derivative in the direction mu and the covariant derivative in the direction nu. Okay. And of course, you may say that since this object involves derivative, this should be a differential operator involving derivative. But the d mu operation here is just, they commute because of Schwarz principle. The covariant derivative, well, ordinary derivative commutes. So although you have that formally d mu is the capital d mu is d mu minus I a mu, that's what it is. We can check that, in fact, this is just the ordinary derivative of a nu minus d nu, the ordinary derivative of a mu. That's what's happened in Maxwell theory. But in a non-abelian series, you have this multiplication by a mu are matrices, so you cannot commute them. And what you get is minus I, the commutator of a mu with a nu. Well, that's a new term which is present when you have a non-abelian gauge symmetry. And again, you can check that MU is a 2x2 matrix, NU is a 2x2 matrix, and the commutator of 2x2 matrix is a 2x2 matrix. And this is, if this is Hermitian, this is Hermitian and traceless because of the minus I. This is also Hermitian in traceless. Okay. So F mu nu lives, so that's the definition. This lives in the fundamental representation. No, in the adjoint representation. Okay, so that's, this is the definition of the field strength, the electromagnetic gauge tensor. And since it lives in the adjoint representation, is a 2x2 matrix, so F mu nu has three independent components. You can write F mu nu as F mu nu A T A, where those are the generators. So A goes from 1 to 3, that's the sum of indices. These are 2x2 matrices. And this is a real object. This is real. Each A is real. But of course, it's an antisymmetric tensor in the Lorentz indices. Antisymmetric in the Lorentz indices. So in terms of Lorentz component, each TA, FA, mu nu can be written, and here I'm going to make mistakes, but basically here you are going to have E1, E2, E3, but labeled by A, and here you are going to have probably B3 minus, well, I don't remember the signs, this is going to be B2, this is minus B3, this is B1, this is minus B1, and this is B2, I'm sorry, B minus B3 and B2. Up to signs, minus E1, minus E2, minus E3, with indices A. So you have, in fact, three different electromagnetic fields. You have a field EA, and you have BA for A equal 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Could you explain that again, please?
Pardon?
Could you explain that again, please? From the 2 cross 2 matrix,
well, it's just that you have three different real components for the gauge field strength. So for each component, you can write it in the usual way in terms of electric and magnetic field E and B, but they are different from the different F mu nu of A. There are no reasons that they are equal, because you have three different A mu, you see? And from this formula, you get three different F mu nu. But what is interesting is that because of the commutator, EA and BA do not depend only on A mu A. That depends also on the other one. And I think in my lecture notes I have put the definition. Yes, there is a formula in the definition. So give me A, it depends. It depends on the three mu, let's say B equal 1, 2, and 3. For a given A. Okay, and I think there is a formula. Maybe I'm going to use it a bit later. Okay. Okay. So you have three different electromagnetic fields because, of course, you have three different potential vectors. So three electromagnetic fields for FU2. which means that in fact, in the theory, when you are going to think, quantize them and think about them, about interaction mediated by photons, gauge bosons, there are going to be three different kinds of gauge bosons, and not only one, like in electromagnetism. Okay. Of course, the since it's a commutator of covariant derivatives which are covariant, F mu nu transforms under a gauge transformation according to these rules for gauge transformation, because it belongs to the adjoint representation. So under a gauge transformation, F mu nu transform as F mu nu, it's written here, plus I, the commutator of alpha with F mu nu. Remember, each F mu nu is a 2x2 matrix, alpha is a 2x2 matrix, so we get a 2x2 matrix. So under a gauge transformation, F mu nu is a covariant under a gauge transformation. Okay, so we are in a good situation. And that's the same than for electromagnetism, except that in Maxwell theory, the commutator is zero, so F mu nu is invariant. So here, F mu nu is covariant under gauge transformation. It transforms non-trivially, but it transforms according to this general rule. Okay. You can say that. In Maxwell theory, it's an invariant because in an abelian U1 gauge symmetry, the adjoint representation is trivial. Yes?
I understand that this new F mu nu is is non-abelian because you have the SU2 group.
Yes.
But I don't understand like the difference between this field strength with the one that we have in Maxwell theory. Because
okay.
They are like the same, right?
Yeah, let me show the difference. The difference is when you compute this, in fact, maybe I will answer it, but explaining the things that I have not explained to you before, which is that if you write this explicitly, for instance, you can check that the electric field, let me write this here, the first electric field, E1, it's dt of E1 minus nabla, of A1. So let's write, as in Maxwell theory, let's write gauge potential as first a time component, which is a Coulomb potential, and then a space vector potential. So this is a four vector. Okay. And this is a Coulomb potential. And this is the vector potential, which has three components. Okay? Then, so now we have three of them. So you have three Coulomb potential and three vector potential. And that's because you have three different charge and three different currents. Remember that you have three currents with a component like that. You have a density, the currents are some density and some electric currents and density of charge. Okay. G mu is some density of charge and some electric current. Okay. A. So now if you want to compute what is E1, first component of E1, this is going to be the derivative with respect to time, the first component here of A1, minus the gradient with respect to space of V1. So that's general definition. That comes from Maxwell's theory. But then you have a term which comes from this commutator, which is V2 A3 minus V3 A2. So we have something which is new. It's not present in the electromagnetic field. The electric field depends in a nonlinear way in the potentials, Coulomb potential and the vector potential. You see? And the same for B. B1 is, well, the usual rotational of A1 plus the antisymmetric, you know, products of A2 and A3. Those terms are new. You see, the relation between the gauge potential and the electric and magnetic field, the electromagnetic field, is already nonlinear. So this is going to make things more complicated, but more interesting, because it means that the dynamics of a non-abelian gauge theory, even the classical dynamics, is going to be nonlinear. No. Solution will not just be plane waves, except in the very weak field approximation. No general plane waves solution. Okay, so, but of course, I started to speak about solution, but solution of what? Solution of the equation of motion of Nabilian gauge field. And in order to have an equation of motion, of course, what you need is to have an action. So that you get Lagrange, Euler-Lagrange equation. So you need to get Maxwell equations. So in order to have Maxwell equation, well, some Maxwell equations are just express the constraints which come from the fact that E and B are given by this formula. See? But those are going to be nonlinear constraints. So you have to have Maxwell equations. So you will have constraint equation, but they are going to be nonlinear. So the analog of the divergence of the fact that the divergence of the electric field, of the magnetic field is zero, and the rotational of the electric field, so something like that. So you have a nonlinear constraint, and you have dynamical equations of motion, which are also going to be nonlinear. But, okay, let me write the action, and then I'm going to make the pose. So, of course, then, which choice of action should we take? Action. Well, for a pure gauge theory, for a pure gauge, so I assume there are no matter, no electric current, no electrons that propelled and so. Then, for a pure gauge theory, the action for this gauge theory is going to be simply, of course, d4x, and you expect to just take f mu nu, f mu nu, the usual term, but that's what's in Maxwell's theory. But in Maxwell's theory, this is a function, this is a function. Now, these are 2x2 matrix. So you can take the products of 2x2 matrix, but it's still a 2x2 matrix. In order to have something which is gauge invariant, in fact, you have to take the trace. which is a number that you can integrate over. Okay? And up to now, I have not introduced any concept of charge in the theory. Of course, there is a charge because the equation of motion are nonlinear. So the nonlinear term which measures the interaction between the gauge field, so there has to be charge. With our notation, the standard notation is that, well, this is the action in an Euclidean, in a Minkowski space, so there is a minus 1 over 2 g squared. So let's take this. So g is the unit of charge of the gauge field. So it's the analog of the charge of the electron. But note that here, now the gauge field carry gauge indices. So the gauge field carry charges. Note that there. So that's different from electromagnetism. In Maxwell's theory, the photon is neutral. That's how it can travel for a long time, et cetera. That's all the property of the universe that we see. We see it because the photon is neutral. It's not deflected by magnetic field. It's not deflected by electric field. Just when it hits some electron or some atom, then it's something happens. Okay. That's not true for gauge theories. They carry charge, which means that they interact in a very different way with matter, and they interact with themselves. Okay. So this is the action. And, well, this action is called the Young-Mill action. This is the Young and Mills action. Mills or Mill? S, yes. Okay, and this name that because this kind of action and the concept of non-abelian gauge field has been introduced in physics by Young and Mills in the 50s, so very early. For they were trying to build a theory which was a wrong theory of weak interaction. So they introduced Young-Mills action for, I think, an SU2 group. It turns out that it's much more complicated than that in the standard model. But in fact, this is the action, for instance, for the interaction, the strong interaction, the quantum chromodynamics, where the group is SU3 instead of SU2. Okay. I think I don't remember very well the story. I think some mathematician, maybe Hermann Weyl, had introduced this kind of concept just for mathematics earlier, but this was not used before that. Okay, anyway, so this goes from 54, something like that. So this was even before I was born, but I'm not sure. Okay. So this is the Young-Mill action. And now, let's do the 5 minutes break, and I will see what are the properties of this action and which kind of interaction it induces. Okay. So let's meet in 5 minutes.
Yeah. So why would you say the theory has a charge only as a nonlinear term?
Yeah. I'm going to show that just later. You'll see that. Written like this, we have chosen a normalization where the gauge transformation contains no E. Often in the Maxwell theory, the gauge transformation contains an E factor. But it amounts to just a different normalization of the gauge field. So this is a normalization where everything here is completely independent of the concept of charge. You just have commutator of objects. So this is geometrical. But then, of course, the strength of the interaction has to appear somewhere. It appears there. But I'm going to show that immediately. So wait for 4 minutes now, and you'll have an answer.
I have a question.
Yes?
Define the gauge transformation. The way I've seen it in the past, I guess, is usually like, say you wrote down complex scalar field theory.
Yes.
And then you said I have a global U1 symmetry and I promote it to a local U1
yes.
symmetry. And then I have to, then I introduce my gauge field in such a way that it cancels out,
yes.
it transforms
yes.
under the symmetry. And that is how I've seen the gauge transformations and the covariates defined in that
yes.
context. But here we have not even talked about necessarily an action that needs to be invariant under these transformations.
Yeah. I think I did the same because I started from a global SU2. I said I want to promote it to the local SU2. And therefore, if you follow the same path and in U1 theory, Maxwell theory, you end up with covariant derivative, but the covariant derivative have to involve the, you know, commutators, and that's so on. And then you have an action. Well, you can, of course, you can, you have different way to introduce gauge theories. That's one of the standard way, which parallel a standard presentation of Maxwell theory. Yeah.
Some basic notation questions. The adjoint representation, the fields in the adjoint representation
yes.
will always be two cosine matrices.
Will
always be two cosine matrices.
Yes.
Because it transforms this G two cosine matrix
yes.
inverse.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's
right. And in the fundamental representation, it will always be two.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's going to be the same for more general groups.
Right. So when we write this field here in the adjoint representation, we
yeah.
mean that it's a two cosine matrix.
Yes, for SU2. Yes.
Great. What happens here? TA is the generator of the SU2.
Yeah, so it's a 2 by 2 by 2 matrix 2.
Yes. But this F mu nu, I knew it is to be a 4 cross 4 matrix.
No, because it's a 4 by 4 matrix in the Lorentz indices. You see?
Okay.
So if you consider that, it's like in Maxwell theory, you often deal with, you consider that F is an antisymmetric tensor. So here I have fixed A and then I write mu and nu as line and column indices of a 4 by 4 matrix.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Yeah.
And sorry, and then we say that this F mu has been written in the representation.
Yes. Yes. So if you make a gauge transformation, you mixes the various F mu nu A. You mixes
yes.
F1, F2, and F3.
Right, right.
While in electromagnetism, you don't mix them because there is only one.
Yes.
So it stays the same. That's just, okay. So I'm, what? Yeah, is that okay? So let me start again and now, you know, showing you what this action means in terms of interactions. So that's very abstract. So first, this action, you can check easily that it is gauge invariant because F mu nu transforms like this. And you can check that when you take this product, the product transforms like there is an alpha, there is commutator. So you end up with trace of commutators, of two matrices. And because of the cyclicity of the trace, the alpha term disappears. So as in electromagnetism, that's clear, but it works also for non-abelian. So this action is gauge invariant. Because this term is gauge invariant. This term, which is the Lagrangian density. So the Lagrangian density, let's call it the Lagrangian density, which is minus 1 over 2g trace of f mu nu, f mu nu, is gauge invariant. As in Maxwell theory. Okay. So now you can express, remember, the F mu nu, F mu nu is just a compact notation for a 2 by 2 matrices whose independent components are the F mu nu 1, F mu nu 2, and F mu nu 3. So when you compute this, you have some F mu nu's, and then you have trace of products of T's. And the trace of, and remember the T's are 1/2 of sigma matrices, of Pauli matrices. So once you work out of this, you can rewrite this in terms of component as, there is a G squared, I'm sorry, as minus 1/4 G squared F mu nu A, F mu nu A. So you sum over, here I sum, well, I can write this as F mu nu A and F mu nu A. And the group indices, A, are 1, 2, 3, are raised and lowered just as you like, because there is a metric which is delta AB, while the Lorentz indices, mu, 1, 2, 3, 4, are raised and lowered according with the standard rule where you use the H mu mu metric tensor. Okay, which for the Minkowski matrix is minus, as a signature, minus plus plus plus. Okay. What?
Four? Did something, did there come a factor half somewhere? Or?
Pardon?
On the left you have 1/2, on the right you have.
Yeah, that's because you have the trace of products of Pauli matrices, but the Pauli matrices is 1/2, so you have a 1/4, but you have 2, so in the, it ends up with taking care of it when you take. See, it means, for instance, that it comes from the fact that, for instance, if you take what is the trace of sigma 1, well, of T1, this is 1/4 of the trace of sigma 1, Pauli matrices, but sigma 1 square is just the unit matrices. So this is 1/4 of trace of the unit matrices. But this is a 2x2 matrix, so it's 2. So this is 1/2. That's basically why you go from 1/2 to 1/4. Yes? No? Okay. Okay, so now if you look at what this is and remember the formula that says that F mu nu, where is it? Where is the formula for the F mu nu? F mu nu is there. So it involves derivative and commutators. You see? You end up that this is this Lagrangian density is, well, let me erase this because I need that. It's going to involve commutator. And then, in fact, what you need to use, in fact, the natural concept is to use what's called the structure constant. Of the Lie algebra. I'm sure that's something you have seen with Tibra in the front end about group theory, which is basically that when you compute the commutator of two generators, TA and TB, which are in this case half of Pauli matrices, this is written FABC of TC, where this is a tensor which is antisymmetric in AB, but there is a relation between the three factors because of Jacobi relation. And so, in particular, for SU2, this is very simple because for SU2, those structure constants, FABC, well, we can raise and lower indices, are just the standard, this is just the standard Levi-Civita Lie antisymmetric tensor. So that you have epsilon 1, 2, 3 is 1. It's completely antisymmetric. So each time that you have two indices which are the same, this is 0. And everything else can be obtained by permutation using antisymmetry. So you just need to know that epsilon 1, 2, 3 is 1. So it's an antisymmetric tensor that defines the vector products, which is there. Here you have the vector products. Okay.
I'm sorry, what is the normalization that we chose for our basis for the TAs?
I choose the TA to be the 1/2 of the Pauli matrices.
Also, the traces. Okay.
And when you work out that, you find that. Of course, if you had chosen different TAs, you would have different AMU and you would have different rules, but it's just the choice of normalization. Okay. Because then you can express the commutator of the A and B in terms of those epsilon ABC. So that's going to be simple. Okay. So now, F mu nu, you know, contains d mu a nu minus d nu a mu plus terms which are quadratic in the A's. And you have a 1 over g squared. So in fact, there is a natural natural rescaling, which is the one which one uses usually in electromagnetism, which is that I redefine a mu as g a mu. With mu, this charge unit. So, okay, so these are new field A mu. It's just a redefinition. But when you have a redefinition, you see that F mu nu becomes a term over the G minus a term over the G squared. So the interactions coming from the commutators are over the G. So this means that indeed G is a charge. Okay, and then L can be rewritten, just do the calculation. What are you going? You get minus 1/2 of d mu a nu minus d nu a mu times d mu a nu minus d nu a mu, well, with indices up and down in order to have a scalar. But now you have three different ones. So, in fact, here you have AA and AA. This is a term quadratic in the A's. And so you see that this term is just the standard term from Maxwell's theory for each A. So this is just.
Both the terms have A because of the base?
Yeah, both terms have A. Because f mu nu is a sum of f mu nu a, f mu, mu nu a, and so you express them in terms of TAs, but here, and you express them in terms, so you are going to have trace of TAs, and basically you are going through something like trace of TA, TB, I think it's something like that, is just 1/2 of delta AB, which is, which end up, so that's basically this, I think. Okay, so this is a, if you want the kinetic term. So this shows that indeed, you know, each A mu describes gauge bosons, a boson. But you have three of them. MUA. Okay. So you are going to have three different kinds of photons. So from electromagnetism, you have one photon. And here you have three different kinds of particles, which are not called photons, but they are called gluons. Because they tend to interact and glue things together. That's the denomination that comes from QCD. That's from SU2 QCD. In SU3, the real QCD, which is SU3, you have 8 different kinds of gluons. Because the dimension of the adjoint representation of SU3 is 8, not 3. Okay, so 3 gluons, because we have SU2. Okay, but then you have, of course, the term that comes from the commutator. And the term which comes from the commutator, first there is a term where you have one commutator, and this is going to be minus g, 1/2, this FABC, so let us write it epsilon ABC. Well, it's epsilon BCA, but by antisymmetric. And then you have d mu A nu A minus d nu A mu A times A mu B times A nu A mu B, if you want, A mu B A nu C. So you have a term which involves interaction between three fields. And then you have a term of order G squared, when you have a product of two commutators, which is G squared, 1, 4. And then you have epsilon CDE. Epsilon ABE, epsilon CDE. That's something which is simple, in fact, of A mu A, A nu B, A mu C, and A nu D. So you have interactions involving three A's and four A's. You see? Okay. So you have interactions. And you see that the strength of the interaction is proportional to the coupling constant. So it's like in quantum electromagnetics, in QED, when you have an interaction between a photon and an electron, it's described by a term where you have a photon absorbed by an electron. So it involves psi psi bar A, and it's proportional to E. Okay, so you have interactions. And that's, of course, new. Yes?
How do we scale there? Because as I understood, you have for each A, you're going to have a G.
Yes.
But then you have four A's and you have G squared.
Because there was a 1 over G squared here. So here you have G squared divided by G squared. Here you have G cubed divided by G squared. Here you have G4 divided by G squared. So this is G4 divided by G squared. This is G squared divided by G with cube, and this one is G squared divided by G squared. It makes the job. Yes?
So non-abelian phase theory cannot be free?
No, they cannot. Only abelian gauge theory are free. And the interaction, you see, you cannot, the interaction is fixed by the structure constant of the algebra. So interaction, you know, are fixed. Given by the structure constant of the gauge group. So you have no choice. You cannot change them. As soon as you change, you see, imagine that here you have to have 1/8 instead of 1/1. You lose gauge invariance. So you have only 1 G. And you have only 1 G because the group SU2 is called a simple group. It cannot be reduced onto products of two groups. Okay. Well, okay. So now everything is classical. So out of this, in fact, you can write Maxwell equation. I think I've wrote them somewhere, maybe. I'm not sure, in my notes, because I played a bit with that. But I'm not going to discuss that here at that stage. It's an interesting example, because first, there is a lot of interesting physics and mathematics in the classical solution of the non-abelian gauge series. And in fact, there are a lot of interesting mathematics developed by both physicists and mathematicians like Donaldson. And I think there is also, I think Donaldson and maybe some other got the field medals for the use of the classical solution of the Young-Mitz equation to do topology. So that's highly non-trivial. Anyway, let's stay at our low-level stage of discussion. and discuss what this kind of interaction means if you start to think of the gauge theory as a quantized theory. So let's first, quantization is a subtle point, but let's assume that we try to quantize it as in QED. Okay, so in QED, the A mu clearly from this non-interaction term, those three terms, describe vector fields. So you have gluons. So this is a gluon. And the gluons carry group indices. You have three different kinds of gluons. Gluons A, gluons B, gluons C. Okay. It's not a color, in fact. That's not a color index of QCD. It's you have two colors in SU2. So the index of the gluons, you know, the gluon index is, for instance, if you have black and white, you have black black, white white, and a superposition of black white minus white black, because it has to be traceless if you want. Okay, so A goes from 1 to 3. 1, 2, 3 for SU2. Okay. And then, of course, if you think of this action as giving Feynman rules describing interactions, so the gluon is something like just the propagator of a gluon. This represents the propagator of the gluon. The propagator of the gluon is just, if you want, it's if you have A and B, this is just delta AB times the ordinary propagator of the photon. So it carries a charge index, but the charge index is conserved along propagation. However, this is just for the propagator. So if you are in a regime of very small, weak fields, the gluons are free. They behave just like three different kinds of photons. However, as soon as the field becomes stronger, then you have to take into account the interactions. Okay, so this is no interactions. These terms represent the interaction between three gluons. So this term is something like that. You have two gluons that can annihilate into one gluon. Or if you prefer, depending on the space-time picture and the momenta, you have one gluon that splits into two gluons. Okay? Of course, this has to be possible by according to the conservation of charge law, because there is gauge invariance. So in fact, this gluon carry a charge A. If this gluon carry a charge B, if this gluon carries a charge C, okay, you see that there is an epsilon ABC, which means that the interactions can only occur if the three gluons are different. So you need that A, you have an epsilon ABC, which means that A has to be different from B, which has that different from C, which has different from A. So the only interaction possible are 1, 2, 3. So a gluon, you know, can only, two gluons can only interact with the third one. Okay. You notice also that there is a d mu of A. So it's going to mean that the interaction will depend on the momenta. You see? It's like for the electron. You have a p, you have p slash. So you have, if you have a momenta p1, if you have a momenta p2, and if you have a momenta p3, in this Feynman rule propagation, the interaction is going to depend on the four momenta of the gluons. So interaction depends on the momenta. Well, it depends on the current carried by the gluons. You see, it's a different, it's a non-trivial kind of interactions. And now the fourth term, of course, and of course it's proportional to G. With G term. It depends on the charge. G. Okay. Now, what about the fourth one? The fourth one, fourth describes an interaction between the four gluons. Okay? So you have a gluon with A, B, C, and D. It doesn't depend on the momenta here. You have no derivative. So this is a three gluon interaction. This is a four gluon interaction. We can mean that you can two gluons that comes and that interacts and makes two gluons, but you can also have one gluon coming and making three gluons, something like that. It's a compact, here it's a contact interaction, like in 5-4, right here you have derivative terms. Okay, it's proportional to G squared. Because you have one more gluon interacting. And one last thing that I can say, well, two last things. First, you have these products of epsilon A, B, E, epsilon C, D, E, but in fact, you can rewrite this as, you see that you have to sum over A, and A and B has to be different from A, and C and D has to be different from E. So it means that basically that A and B have to be different. But C, so therefore C and D have to be either AB or BA. So in fact, this interaction is proportional to delta AB, well, I'm sorry, delta AC, delta BD, minus delta AD, delta BC, so just a bit of algebra. So this means either if you have A and B, if you have A and B, if they are the same, this is 1 minus 1. So A has to be different from B. And either you have A, B here, or you have B, A here, with opposite amplitudes of interactions. So you have so you see the symmetries. Okay. So you have either you have A, B gives A, B, or A, B gives B, A, with plus and minus sign. And what could I say? Ah, one last thing. Of course, you have Lorentz indices here. A nu, A mu, A mu, B nu, here mu, nu, mu, mu nu, which means that the interactions depend on the polarization. Both in the case, interaction depends on the polarization. Of the gluons, remember, you know, in the weak field interaction, these are just photons, so they have two transverse polarization. But the interaction depends in a complicated way on the polarization of the gluon. So it's a complicated theory, but everything is fixed by the gauge symmetry, by the group symmetry. You have no choice. The only parameter which is left is G, the charge. Okay, so. Yes?
Meaning in the minor sign in the four gluon interaction.
What?
Is it a physical meaning for the minor sign in the four gluon?
Well, probably, but I never thought about it, or if I thought, I forgot. It comes from the symmetry, I think.
Okay.
If you had not that, you had no gauge. So everything, basically, that's what I said. I'm sorry, I cannot answer more precisely, but everything is fixed. Is fixed by the gauge symmetry here, SU2, but for the charge or the coupling, G, the strength of the coupling. Okay. So that's like in Maxwell's theory, except that in Maxwell's theory you have no interactions here. Okay. Okay, and finally, well, I won't have time to start to discuss gauge fixing. That's what I was suspected, but that's, you know. Okay, so now let's go back to adding matter. Namely, bosons, given by a field phi, or Dirac, scalar bosons, or Dirac fermions, described by psi and psi bar fields, which now belongs to the fundamental representation, which means that they carry charge for the SU2 symmetry. So a scalar boson, in fact, there are two of them. See, phi is given by phi. Remember, the indices was I. Is I equal 1 or 2? And this is complex because it carries charges. So you have a boson 1. It's charged, so you have a boson and its antiparticle. Charge plus and charge minus, and two. So you have 4 degrees of freedom here. And the four for the fermions, that's exactly the same. Now psi is a collection of psi mu, but psi mu are Dirac fields. So psi is a collection of psi I alpha. With I equal 1 to 2, you have two kind of fermions, but alpha has the Dirac indices. 4, this has Dirac. This has SU2, this is Dirac. Okay? And you have 4 fields because, and those are real. Each component is real. Okay, this, which means that you have 2 of the states which correspond to the 2 spin orientation polarization of the electron, and the 2 other ones correspond to the 2 spin degrees of freedom of the antiparticle. Okay, so everything is consistent. Nothing here, nothing changed compared to QECD or scalar QED or scalar QED with boson, except that you have two different kinds of elements. And then, well, remember that couplings to scalar or fermions. Well, I have just 5 minutes, so let me just discuss the case of. Well, we'll discuss the case of boson later when I will be discussing the Higgs mechanism. So let's concentrate on the Dirac fermions. Well, as I mentioned the last lecture, in fact, in order to have a connection, you must have a Lagrangian density for Dirac, which is I, if I'm not remember, well, the covariant derivative slash, so it's going to be psi bar, I, the covariant derivative, with, so covariant means that it contains an A, minus or plus, I never remember, it's written there probably, in my notes, fermions minus M psi. Okay. Where this slash, as I remember now, this slash is just gamma mu, Dirac matrices, covariant derivative with respect to mu, which is d mu, and where is my coefficient of the covariant derivative? D mu minus I. A mu, so that's exactly like the Dirac in QED, psi. Yeah. Except that, of course, now you have to take into account all these new indices I. Yes.
So just to sure. Then we would have a tensorial product between the 4x4 gamma matrix.
Yes. It's a standard notation where here I have it's a tensor product of something belonging to the Clifford algebra, and this is belongs to the adjoint representation. So in terms of better write it with writing all the indices so that we are sure that we do not forget anything. What we get is that, of course, that this is psi bar. So I have arrays and lower indices, so I get like I. I alpha. Here I have psi bar, but I'm going to have a matrix. I have G. Beta, psi of x. Here I have gamma mu alpha beta. This takes care of the Dirac indices. Here I have d mu, but this is just the identity. So I have delta ig, delta, well, hig, because I'm in a I'm sorry, I have delta, because this is Lorentz indices, right? This is a group indices, delta ig d mu, okay, minus I, and here I have, remember, a mu is a mu a, a mu is ta, so I have a ta. So I have minus I, I'm sorry, so I'm missing it. Minus I. So, okay. Minus I. A mu is A mu A T A. So I get minus I. A mu A, that's the number. T A, this is a 2x2 matrix, which has indices I and G. I and G goes from 1 to 2. This is a 2x2 matrix. And that's it. Times psi G beta. OK. So this is with all the indices. We have not forgotten anything. This is L Dirac. And you see that it's the same kind of interaction than for Maxwell's theory for QED, except that you have this, which is new. This is U2 for SU2. Okay, and if you think about what kind of interaction vertex is done, this gives interaction vertex. So you have, of course, the standard propagator for Dirac fermions. You have the standard Dirac propagator, except that you have fermion I, you have a fermion G, and this is delta IG times QED Dirac. This is for SU2. Okay, so you have two kind of fermions that propagates like standard fermions in the Dirac theory. Cool. This is so trivial that I could have forgotten. You get minus M. Well, there is a factor I, I'm sorry. Minus M delta alpha beta delta I G, and I think I'm not, there is no mu, I psi G beta. So you have the standard mass term, but you see that the mass term is the same for the two fermions. same mass for the two fermions, of course, because of the SU2 symmetry. Okay, so you have two fermions with, so you have two fermions, two UAC fermions with the same mass. Okay. And now, I'm sorry, I'm going too fast. When I make this change of normalization E, A to GA, I get a G here. So you see that M and same charge G because of gauge invariance. And the interaction is going to be so it's the same interaction term given by this than in QED, except that you have here I, here you have G, the boson Ha A, the gauge carries an index A. It carries a polarization mu. While the Dirac fermions carries an index A the charge and the Dirac index. And you see that the interaction, well, preserves alpha beta, because here, no, the interaction is a standard gamma mu alpha beta, which means that the polarization of the gluon, you know, flips the spin of the electrons. That's a standard QED. But in addition, you get a factor I minus I, so we get the factor TA mu nu. TAIG. So the interaction depends on the charge of the gluon, depends on the charge of the Dirac fermions. And since the TAs are anti-symmetric, anti-emission matrices, they may flip or may not flip the charge. So you have an interaction which is a standard interaction for Lorentz. So spin standard interactions for the spin between the spin one for the gluon and the spin one half for the electrons. But standard interaction, but the charge interaction, which depend on SU2, and SU2, so it depends on the charge of the gluon. While in QED, the photon is neutral, so the charge of the Dirac fermions doesn't change. If you have an electron, it's an electron, and if you have a positron, it's a positron. Here, this may change. Okay. And of course, this this interaction is proportional to G, charge. Okay. And you see in particular that the coefficient G here is the same than here. So it means that the charge of the electron, charge of the fermions, of the Dirac fermions, equals or is related, well, in other group, for other groups, there is a relation, but slightly more complicated, is related to the charge of the gluon. Again, gauge symmetry fixes the relation between the charge of the gluon and the charge of the Dirac fermions. Okay. So, well, you can do the same thing for the scalar bosons, but well, we are going to go back to that. Well, maybe not for SU2. Anyway, that's the same same kind of rules. Okay. So let me end there. And we are on Friday. So next Monday, I start to discuss seriously quantization and whether those naive Feynman rules are the end of the story or not. Okay. Thank you.
So if there's no free theory here, so in the non-abelian case, if
yes,
free theory, then is there a concept of like free vacuum or interacting vacuum? Because like in canonical quantization, we...
Yes. Though in fact, there is only one vacuum. Well, depending for a given G, there is only one vacuum. For a given complete constant, there is only one vacuum. The CO is always interacting. So once you have G, you have the interaction. And you can not so easily play with it than with scalar field theory. But of course, the vacuum, here you have an action with a G factor, you see? And so quantum CO, if you succeed in quantizing it, it has a vacuum. And this vacuum is an interacting vacuum. Well, probably if you consider that the coupling constant depends on space-time, which is possible, you can play with that. You can have start from a pass when G is zero, plug on G, have interaction, and in the future you turn down G and have a free gluons. Now you can do that, I think. But well, because of asymptotic freedom and because of the scale invariant of the theory, I think things are more complicated. Because when we are going to discuss the renormalization, you are going to see that this theory has scale invariance like phi 4 in 4 dimension. It's not trivial on this, and discuss that. But that the scale invariance is anomalous. So there is a non-trivial beta function. That's one of the most famous results of the theory. But that's for next week.
And this four body term, four v one.
Yes.
If in the Lagrangian we just like expand our anti-symmetric tensors, we
yes,
use the identity for the deltas.
Yes.
From the anti-symmetric to the deltas.
Yes.
We get a positive sign for one of the terms. So.
Well, it's the same. I'm just using a relation. I'm just using this special relation which I wrote somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
For the structure constant of SU2. So you have a more, for SU3, you have a different relation.
Oh. But
because you have more indices.
Does the positive sign mean something in the Lagrangian?
Does
the positive sign mean something in the
Lagrangian? Yeah, possibly, but I'm not sure. Yeah, it means surely something, because as I said, you have no choice. You cannot have plus in the case and minus. You cannot interchange. You can say if I have minus and plus, because then you change this term and you lose gauge invariance. But I would not be able. Well, I'm sure you can find an explanation deriving from the symmetry, saying that it has to be this.
And then you have like a
this sign, this choice of coefficient because of the symmetry.
So in like QCD, you get an H vortex term.
Is it?
In QCD.